Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo
Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Reading from Srimad Bhagavatam. On page 12, chapter 9, verse number 26.
Darshanadvita parishramo buddha. Vapula vritpadma vilochanam bhuja. Krishna Murbhuta Baba Sankhita Prashtum Parastham Prasasara Balakam Tadarshana Dita Tadishramo Buddha Tatpula Hrithadna Vilochannam Bhuja Vahrishkarana Dita Bala Samhita Prashtum Parastham Prashasara Bharatam Tatarshanat
By seeing the child,
Vita dispelled, Parishrammaha, his weariness, Vida, out of pleasure, Vatula, expanded wide, Paripadma, the lotus of his heart, Vilochana Ambuja and his lotus eyes. Prakrishta standing on end. Roma, the hairs on his body. Adbhuta Bhava, about the identity of this wonderful form. Sankhitaha, confused. Prastham, in order to inquire, Puraha, in front, Tam, of him, Prasasara, he approached, Bhalatam, the child. Translation. As Markandeya, he held the child, all his weariness vanished. Indeed, so great was his pleasure that the lotus of his heart, along with his lotus eyes fully blossomed and the hairs on his body, stood on end. Confused as to the identity of the wonderful infant, the sage approached him. The court. Markandeya wanted to ask the child about his identity and therefore approached him. Here in this chapter, Markandeya Rishi sees the illusory potency. Markandeya Rishi has been sitting in meditation and suddenly, by the arrangement of the Lord's illusory potency, he has been engulfed in the apparent devastation of the entire universe, in which case the universe fills with water and everything is dissolved. The whole universe is destroyed. somehow or another spending millions of years floating on the waters of devastation, he comes across a little island, and on that island is a small banyan tree, and in that tree is upon a branch of the northeast portion of that tree he saw an infant boy lying within a leaf. And the child was very, very effulgent. And it describes that form of the Lord, and then that Supreme Lord, Krishna, actually placed his toe within his mouth and began to suck his toe. You ever seen babies do that? Whenever I see, you know, babies do that, they just stick their toe in their mouth and start sucking. Always reminds me of this particular pastime. Very cute, very, very attractive, very attractive. So then, in today's verse, Markandeya Rishi, he's beholding this child, he's seeing him, and all his weariness vanished. And he was also feeling great ecstasy. So, being confused as to, you know, who is this personality, he approached him to inquire. He wanted to inquire. We'll read the next verse, which describes it. At this point, Krishna didn't quite give him that opportunity. Text number 27. Tavach chisho vai sasistina bhargavaha suntaha shariram masako ita vishat tachap yado nyastam achasta krishna sho ita puramu yad. Just then the child inhaled, drawing Markandeya within his body like a mosquito. There the sage found the entire universe arrayed as it had been before its dissolution. Seeing this, Markandeya was most astonished and perplexed. Text 28-29. Kamrodha Sipaganam Maji Sagram Dipam Savasam Kakubaha Sura Suran Panandi Desan Saritaha Purakaran Kitan Rajanasama Bana Vritaya Mahanti Bhutan Yata Bhutikan Yasho Akalam Channana Yuga Kalpa Kalpanam Yatkinjit Danya Vyava Parakaranam Tadasa Visham Sad. The sage saw the entire universe, the sky, the heavens, the earth, the stars, mountains, oceans, great islands and continents, the expanses in every direction, the saintly and demoniac living beings, the forests, countries, rivers, cities and mines, the agricultural villages and cow pastures, and the occupation and spiritual activities of the various social orders. He also saw the basic elements of creation along with their byproducts, as well as time itself, which regulates the progression of countless ages within the days of Brahma. In addition, he saw everything else created for use in material life. All this he saw manifested before him as if it were real. Himalayam Pushpavaham Chattam Dhadham Nijasramam yatrarishi apashyataha avishvam vipashyan achvastittach tishovai bahinarasto nyapatalayabdal. He saw before him the Himalayan mountains, the Pushpabhadra river, and his own hermitage, where he had the audience of the sages Naranarayan. Then, as Markandeya beheld the entire universe, the infant exhaled, expelling the sage from his body and casting him back into the ocean of dissolution. Tasmin pratibhya kukuti parudham apatam chattatpana putte shayanam atokam chattatpana sada smittinna nirikshito bhanga nirikshashanina atatham balakam viksha nirchabhyam dishtitam hidi abhyayadati sankrishtaha parisvaktum madokshajam. In that vast sea, he again saw the banyan tree growing on the tiny island and the infant boy lying within the leaf. The child glanced at him from the corner of his eyes with a smile, imbued with the nectar of love. And Markandeya took him into his heart through his eyes. Greatly agitated, the sage ran to embrace the transcendental personality of Godhead. Tavatsa Bhagavan Chakshad Yogadisho Guha Sayaha Antadadharishe Sadhyo Tatehanisha Nirmita. At that moment, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is the original master of all mysticism and who is hidden within everyone's heart, became invisible to the sage, just as the achievements of an incompetent person can suddenly vanish. Tam anvatavato brahman salilam lokasam plabaha tirodhai kshanadasha shashami purvavatsitaha. After that, the Lord disappeared, O Brahmana. After the Lord disappeared, O Brahmana, the banyan tree, the great water, and the dissolution of the entire universe all vanished as well. And in an instant, Markandeya found himself back in his own hermitage, just as before. We were actually discussing this in Bhakti Vaibhava once about time, the duration of time, that here, you know, Markandeya Rishi is actually in meditation, but by Krishna's illusory energy and as described before, that time, which regulates Krishna's material energy, material time, you know, Krishna created the situation in which Markandeya Rishi appeared to live throughout millions and millions and millions of years. But actually he was, you know, sitting in his hermitage, meditating. But Krishna had put him under the influence of the material energy through the time factor, and he actually thought that he was living in this waters of devastation for millions and millions of years. So we see that the influence of time in the material world, past, present and future, is not always what it seems. Because we live in a particular span of time, we assume that everyone in the material world is influenced by the same spans of time. We were discussing, just as we discussed this point in the fact that when one goes back to the spiritual world, one's entire duration in material existence will appear just like a fleeting moment. So, you know, in essence, we feel that you know, we may have been in the material world for millions and millions and millions and millions of lifetimes, but upon returning to the spiritual world, where the influence of time is as it is displayed in the material world, past, present and future, is absent, then, you know, our entire duration in the material world, we will see it for the illusory state that it is, and it will just be like just a little flickering moment. It's enough that we don't want to come back. There's enough understanding that we don't want to return to the material world, but at the same time, in essence, it doesn't really disturb our position in the spiritual world. We were discussing this in the second canto, which is the Bhagavatam, in the seventh chapter, in the first few verses, describing, you know, how the living entity appears to fall within the material world. And we see there that a comparison is given that it is something like a dream situation. In fact, the spirit soul never actually falls from his position, but he's placed into the illusion that he has accepted a material body and material existence. Actually, the spirit soul is never really changed from his original spiritual position. So he's fallen in the sense that he's accepting that illusion. So that is a fallen, and therefore he's suffering. And so much suffering, so much pain in the material world. So it's not, we can't say it's illusory in the sense that the living entity is not suffering. Everyone knows that this material world is a place of suffering. But at the same time, that suffering is apparent because it's like a dreamlike condition, which is actually produced by the illusory energy, and the spirit soul is actually by nature Satchidananda or eternally blissful. Here we see an example of a similar thing with, you know, that Markandeya Rishi, he's appearing what appears to be, you know, a huge duration of material existence. Actually, he's just sitting, you know, and that length of time is a manifestation of the illusory potency, and he is identifying himself with that situation. And at the end, of course, he finds that he's just still sitting there. Just as, you know, we may have, you know, a dream, in which case, you know, we may be dreaming that we're being chased by, you know, some gang of, you know, dacoits. And we're running, 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 and we seem to be running all night, hours and hours and hours, you know. These are days and days. But when we wake up, we may realize that, you know, we've only dozed off for a few moments. In fact, you know, what appeared to be you know, a thousandfold increase of time is actually just happened within a few seconds. So material existence is like that, and this is an example of that point. So this is all very bewildering, because what is even more mystifying is when Markandeya Rishi sees Krishna on this island enjoying himself as a sucking his toe, as the Acharyas described, that Krishna innocently thinking that everyone is trying to enjoy or to taste nectar at the lotus feet of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Maybe I have a little taste myself. So, seeing that particular scene, that is even more mystifying. So, naturally, he wanted to inquire from that Supreme Lord. So that inquiry, actually, that inquiry is what separates the humans from the animal species of life. A human being will actually inquire as to why they're bewildered, why they're suffering. If the material world, of course, is a place of suffering, and if we can't stop that suffering condition, we're bewildered, then a human will want to come to the platform of knowledge that how can I stop this suffering condition? Whereas an animal, they will not make that inquiry. They just accept their position in life, that this is my nature. For instance, I am a dog and I sleep on the street. Just like, that previously in civilized countries, especially India, that dogs never entered a house. Even if the door was open, the dogs would not actually speak to the house because they understood the dog. I don't belong in a house, I belong on the street. Like that. Actually, I had a dog when I was on the farm, Harry Bass. I called him Harry Bass because when he was naughty, I was going to beat him. because he was a devotee of Krishna. Although he was a dog, you could leave any door open for hours and you could walk away, and even he would think that no one was there, he would never go inside, never walk inside. Of course, these days we say that dog is man's best friend, which means that because humans have degraded the position of the dog, but the dogs are thinking, well, this is what dogs do, we go into houses now. You see? So they're imitating humans who are acting like dogs. So then the dogs will go into the house. But the point being that animals generally, they don't, they accept their position. They sleep out in the cold. Now we know, it's very, very cold conditions in winter. The animals will just sleep out there in the green and the trees and little holes there and things like that. And they'll just accept that for what it is. But a human being will make the inquiry, why am I suffering like this? What is my position? Who am I? What am I? What am I means that, is this my eternal position? That I'm a material being who must suffer in the material world? Or am I something different from matter who can actually transcend, the material conditions? If so, what is my duty? What am I supposed to do in order to come to that transcendental position? Like this. So we see that Sanatana Goswami asked these same questions. When Sanatana Goswami, he was very, very elevated person. He was a minister. Sanatana Goswami, of course, became one of the first disciples, the Anglika Goswami, of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu made them as the commanding generals of the entire Vaishnava community for all time to come, and, under the disciple succession of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. But initially, Sanatana Goswami was in this position where he was considering that although I'm a minister for the, at that time, Muslim rulers, and they'd been, he and his brother, Rupa, they'd been they had been forced into the position because they were. He understood these persons are very, very intelligent persons, well educated, very capable, just the sort of persons that I need to administer my kingdom. And he pressured them that, you know, if they didn't take up that service, that, you know, there were threats against family members and what have you. And so, you know, they were somewhat forced into that position by circumstances. And then, of course, the Brahmana community rejected them because they took up service. One who takes a Brahman is self-sufficient in their activities. They don't take up service to anyone else. They maintain themselves. They do not serve others. If they take up the position of serving others, they fall from the brahminical position. Prabhupada sometimes tells the story of one he saw, you know, there was one rickshaw wala, and, you know, he's running down the street doing the rickshaw, and someone greeted him, you know, like a Brahmin. He turned, yes, he showed his street, yes, I am also a Brahmin. Prabhupada makes the point, because as soon as you take up service, you're a Brahmin. But, you know, of course, we understand that in emergency situations, such as Kali Yuga, that even the Brahmanas sometimes, you know, forced by law practically in circumstances, they must take up service, you know, to like that. So they may need to act in a certain way which they normally wouldn't do. In which case they may accept the position of a Kshatriya or a Vaishya, never the situation of a Sudra. But such persons will do that as long as the emergency situation exists. And as soon as the first opportunity comes, they will become self-sufficient in their existence. And not that they will remain in that situation during the material pleasures of that situation. Being fearful that they will not be maintained by the Supreme, or being fearful that there is not enough, you know, enjoyment of sense gratification into your body. So Sanatana Goswami, he left that position and he approached Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and he asked him those questions, because he you know, why am I suffering the threefold miseries in material existence? Who am I? What am I? And what is my duty? Is. And that's the platform of human life that distinguishes anyone who does not do that. Actually, is on the living on the platform of animal existence, who don't make that inquiry. In other words, the human beings have that potential, they have that opportunity. An animal can't make that inquiry. They don't have that intelligence, they don't have that facility in the animal forms of life. In the human form of life, that is the major distinction, that they can actually ask that question, those questions, and get the answer and solve those problems of why they're suffering. If they don't, they actually remain in the animal platform. I think there was a verse previous that people cultivate knowledge, but such knowledge, especially in this age of Kali, actually just further entangles them in ignorance or the animal platform of life, and therefore Srila Prabhupada would actually refer to modern civilization as polished animal life. But basically it's animal life, so it has a little bit of a shine. So it appears like something special, but it's actually, one animal may praise the activities of other animals, as described in the Srimad Bhagavatam, second canto again, that someone who is completely on the platform of animal life, completely in ignorance, who is just going to accept their material condition unconditionally, unconditional surrender to the material energy, they praise bigger animals. Or you have created, that I am eating, sleeping, mating and defending in these very simple situation, and these big animals have created, big skyscrapers that we can eat, sleep and mate and defend, in a very polished way. Srila Guru Kishore Das Babaji used to describe the same thing, that people build huge buildings and platforms, and when they get on top of that very high elevated place, they pass through. So someone is passing stool, 15 story high in the penthouse, and someone is passing stool in the fields. So, Guru Kishore Das Babaji would laugh, what it is. What they're doing is still passing stool. It matters, a big building. So, in this way, but one animal will praise, you are such a wonderful, you've done so much, you have so much knowledge and scientific advancement. Just like I described an analogy which I saw in a documentary the other week, they're testing space flight. And one of the things, they're spending millions and millions of dollars on this, that they simulate, they drop a capsule from a very, very high height, and they drop it down, and for some time it creates a weightlessness. And although it costs millions and millions of dollars, it's actually cheaper than sending, the rocket up into space. And in this way, they can test, the symptoms of weightlessness and how it affects things like liquids and that. And they were saying, because they know that they're going to get this money back. Any businessman knows you're spending money because you're going to get this money back. How are they going to get this money back? They're testing what happens to a cup of beer, alcohol, when it is in a weightless condition. Can you still drink alcohol when you're in space. That's what they're doing. And, you know, because they know that, you know, the next big business, which is the Branson, is already doing, gradually sending people into space, charging, you know, they pay big, big money for, you know, just to go up for 5 minutes. You know, and of course, the higher they go, the more money like this. But if people can drink alcohol and, you know, have flight stewardess bring them a meal, their meat and veggies like this, you know, then they will pay the extra for the, you know, the first class. So, you know, the money will come back. But it's the same basic principle. And of course, they will also be, you know, you can guarantee they'll be testing what happens when you pass through in the condition of weightlessness. That's the fact. And as Gaura Kishore Das Babaji explaining, just the platform's getting higher. And you're getting so high you need a rocket to get to the top of the platform. When you get there, you're still going to pass through. So, but such persons, although they're trying to, they're continually suffering birth, death, old age and disease, a real problem which they can't actually solve, they'll just accept, no, everyone must die. And then just die in peace. Die with dignity, you know, have a good send off like this. But you know, basically you have to die. But an intelligent person will ask for, you know, every, you know, molecule or every aspect of my being is fighting against death. Actually, no one wants to die. That appears to be natural to me. Death appears to be something which is unnatural to my very happiness, my very existence, but somehow or another it seems to be imposed upon me. Can that be changed? So, in this way, Sanatana Goswami, he actually asked these different questions, and therefore he approached Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, his spiritual master. Of course, these days people also approach a spiritual master. But, you know, when people approach a spiritual master these days, you know, they approach because there may be some illness, you know, or I'm having trouble with my bowels. I go to the guru. So, even they're approaching the spiritual master, actually, they're still fixed on the same, you know, problems. But actually, according to the Shastra, one approaches a spiritual master in order to get out of the darkness. All the scriptures describe that one should go to the light of knowledge, and come out of the darkness. You know, animal platform of life is the darkness. That's the platform of ignorance. But all the scriptures say you must come out of the darkness and you must come to the light of knowledge. One who, again, that question by Sanatana Goswami, you know, I'm in darkness, why am I suffering? I don't know, that is darkness. Who am I? That is darkness. I don't know the answer. What is my duty? I don't know. So to come out of the darkness, that yes, I know who I am. I know what is my duty, what to do and what not to do. I know the reason that I am put into this condition of suffering, and I know how to stop the repetition of birth, death, old age and disease. But that is coming to the light. But these days people don't approach a guru. Guru is some fashion. People accept a guru in the same way they accept a dog. And it's very fashionable for people to have a dog. And as we described, man's best friend. And people bring their dogs into the house, some of the animals into the house. They all live there. The two-legged animals and the four-legged animals. And their habits are not too far different. But certainly one is a big polished animal, and one is just a more honest animal. But people accept a spiritual master in the same way it's fashionable to accept a dog. And which means that they have no intention of following the spiritual master's instructions in order to come out of the darkness of animal-like existence. Their purpose in accepting a spiritual master these days is, I want to remain exactly in the position I am, living on the animal platform, but I want any obstacles removed. So I can remain in this platform of darkness and animal-like life for as long as possible and get as much enjoyment out of this platform of ignorance as is possible. Just like trying to wake someone who's very lazy and they want to spend 10, 15 hours in bed, 16 hours in bed, get up, pull the covers over, people accept a guru like that. They have no intention of coming out of the darkness, no intention of coming from that animal platform of life. We see, I know when I go to many different homes, people's houses, doing different ceremonies for the Hindu population. But it doesn't matter Hindu population or Christian or Muslim. People accept Jesus in the same way, and people accept Muhammad in the same way. In this age, people have no intention really to follow Jesus, Muhammad, Buddha, Krishna. People just want, that it is socially, I look better if I'm a Christian. I live in this part of the world. Everyone calls himself a Christian. If I call himself a Muslim, I'll not make many friends. I'll not get invited to the barbecue. Better I call myself a Christian, or at least say, well, at least I'm not a Muslim. In the Muslim part of the world, they're thinking the same. That if I don't call myself a Muslim, doesn't matter whether I follow anything, but if I don't say I'm a Muslim, if I say I'm a Christian or a Buddhist, how will I be accepted? Will I be able to get a good wife? Who will give their daughter in marriage? In this way, people, for that's what we mean, as a fashion, out of tradition, out of peer pressure, social circumstances, people accepting their guru or the Lord in a way of fashion, but that people are not accepting a guru, that yes, I actually want to come out of this bodily concept of life. But actually, according to the scriptures, so therefore we see here in the Nectar Devotion that Rupa Goswami, we have described that Rupa and Sanatan Goswami, they were instructed by Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Now Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is described in the Shastras and by all the Acharyas as Lord Sri Krishna himself. Lord Sri Krishna spoke the Bhagavad Gita and asked that ultimately when he spoke about the Gita, he spoke 18 chapters. He described Karma Yoga, Jnana Yoga, Ashtanga Yoga, some mixtures of these, and Bhakti Yoga. And ultimately he said, you give up all this, you just take the Bhakti Yoga and you surrender unto me. That's the instruction. And how do you do that? You always think of me. You become my devotee. You worship me, you offer your obeisances to me. That's the only instruction of Bhagavad Gita. Actually, Srila Prabhupada says that the rest of the Bhagavad Gita, there's no need for Krishna to speak it. That's the only instruction in Bhagavad Gita. The rest of it is not necessary. But because people won't take that instruction, Krishna has to try and give them some understanding why you should take that instruction. You know, if we compare the results of Karma Yoga, yes, you can go to the heavenly planets, but you're still in the material world, you still suffer. Or you can take the Jnana Yoga, you may achieve understanding that you're a spirit soul, but still you don't know how to act on the spiritual platform. But if you take the Bhakti Yoga, you're automatically liberated and you prepare yourself for spiritual activities. So therefore take that position, and spiritual activities means that the spirit soul serves the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So you surrender to me, and there'll be no need for fear. So Krishna gives this instruction, and Arjuna took that instruction. Now where that instruction finishes, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu begins his answers to Sanatana Goswami. Jivera Svarupahoya Nichi Krishna Das. When he answers Sanatana Goswami, he says, yes, you are the eternal servant of Krishna. To the point where Bhagavad Gita finishes, that is your only duty, to serve Krishna. Who are you? You're the eternal servant of Krishna. The eternal servant of Krishna. And what is your duty? As the eternal, what is your duty? If you're the eternal servant of Krishna, what is your duty? To serve Krishna. That is a liberated position. And that solves the problem of birth, death, old age and disease. But he gives the answer. So from, you know, where Bhagavad Gita leaves off, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu begins his instruction to Sanatana Goswami. So look, you know, these instructions to Sanatana Goswami are extremely important for Vaishnavas. And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu instructed Sanatana Goswami for 2 months in order that he could write books on the science of devotional service. How do I become the eternal servant of Krishna and perform Bhakti Yoga or devotional service? Chaitanya Mahaprabhu also instructed his brother, Rupa Goswami. So Sanatana Goswami wrote the Hari Bhakti Vilas. You can buy it in the bookshop store sometimes, it's about 9 volumes. I have it at home, it takes up about that much room on my shelf. But Rupa Goswami, he wrote a summary that all the details of the science and devotional service are mentioned in the Hari Bhakti Vilas. But the main principles, Rupa Goswami has summarized in his Nectar Devotion. All of those main principles form 64 principal items of devotional service. And the first 10 are the primary instructions of those items. So I'll just read those 10. One should accept the shelter of the lotus feet of a bona fide spiritual master. 2, becoming initiated by the spiritual master and learning how to discharge devotional service from him. So you see that this is the to learn from the instructions of the spiritual master is not the sign of a fool, people think like that, that, oh, you know, you have to have a spiritual husband, you know, because you're incompetent. Whereas we are very expert in the material world, you are very confident, so you need some crutch to lean on. Because you are foolish and less intelligent. That's what people will think. Actually, the intelligent person approaches a spiritual master. And actually, when Chaitanya Mahaprabhu spoke to Sanatana Goswami, he said that actually, because you have asked these questions, you're not an ordinary person. You're liberated. In fact, the threefold miseries of life will not affect you just because you've asked the questions. Even before giving an answer. So Prabhupada actually describes that one who approaches a spiritual master and inquires from him, that person is already liberated. He's at the beginning of liberation, but liberated. He's at the very beginning of transcending birth, death, old age and disease, because he's asked that question, how do I do it? Then the answer will be given, and if he or she sincerely takes up, you can guarantee that person will be liberated. That is the Shastric. Any person who is sincere, who inquires from a bona fide spiritual master, that person's success is guaranteed. That's the statement of the Shastras. There's no question, no doubt. And Krishna also said, you surrender unto me, I shall protect you from all reactions of material energy. There's no doubt. Do not fear. So, of course, after learning how to discharge devotional service, the third one is obeying the orders of the spiritual master with faith and devotion. So it doesn't stop there. And that's the distinction. That's one of the distinctions again between accepting a spiritual master as a fashion statement to be socially accepted, and someone who actually taking shelter in such a way that he'll be liberated, following in the footsteps of the great acharyas under the direction of the spiritual master. So the spiritual master teaches one how to follow the great acharyas. He doesn't just give anything new, nothing new. He doesn't manufacture anything. So even if one accepts the spiritual master and agrees to follow the spiritual master, if that spiritual master is presenting a concocted version of instruction which is not mentioned in the Bhagavad Gita, which is the essence of all instruction, still they remain on the platform of those who are condemned to material existence. Five, inquiring from the spiritual master how to advance in Krishna consciousness, how to make further advancement. Being prepared to give up anything material for the satisfaction of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Sri Krishna. This means that when we are engaged in the devotional service of Krishna, we must be prepared to give up something which we may not like to give up, and also we may have to accept something which we may not like to accept. Seven. So those first six reside specifically to how to properly accept the spiritual master and take shelter. Seven. Residing in a safer place of pilgrimage like Dwarka or Vrindavan, or regularly visiting temples such as we have here. 8. Accepting only what is necessary, or dealing with the material world only as far as necessary. This is where Markandeya Rishi needed to understand this principle, that you know, we deal with the material world only as far as necessary. And he wanted to see Krishna's illusory potency. He wanted more association with the material energy than what was required. and Krishna, you know, put him through this situation of floating in the waters of the universe of devastation for millions and millions of years. But Krishna was very kind to him, because he was his Krishna's devotee. But those who are not devotees, who actually want to accept, associate with material energy, they actually will have to take birth for millions and millions of years. So, you know, in essence, Krishna is very kind, but he, you know, he reduced that millions and millions of years of suffering to just, you know, some time within his meditation. Nine, observing the fasting day on a codicil, and number 10, worshipping sacred trees like the banyan tree. Worshipping sacred trees like the banyan tree means to pay due respect to everything that's really associated with the Lord. So that means, you know, cows, you know that Krishna is very, the cows are very dear to Krishna, so one should offer them respect. Banyan tree, Tulasi tree in particular amongst trees, the devotees of the Lord, the prasadam of the Lord, these things, that's what it means, you know, right down to the banyan tree. So this number 9, of course, is probably a good example. Today is a codicil. Today is under the knee of the codicil. So it's very, very, very important instruction given by the Shastras, and because those instructions are given by the spiritual master, which are given by the previous acharyas, which are given by Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, which is given by Shastra, therefore one should follow that, and by following that one actually becomes makes a huge advancement on the path back to the spiritual world. One becomes spiritually situated. This codicil, the deity of the codicil, is actually non-different from Lord Vishnu. Following codicil means worshipping the Lord, the Supreme Personality of the Godhead. Because the codicil deity actually appeared from the form of the Lord, and actually Lord Vishnu went to Srimati Radharani tells this story, and Mahavishnu went to of Yamaraj and heard so much suffering coming, you know, wailing, crying, screaming, you know, fear and anxiety coming from the residents of the hellish planets. He actually became so compassionate, and not wanting anyone to suffer like this, that from his form appeared the deity of a codicil. And he gave that concession that anyone who takes shelter of Sri Codicil Devi becomes freed from all this sinful reaction, and they don't have to suffer in the day of Yamaraj. So therefore on this particular day one worships the deity form of Sri Codicil, who is not different from Lord Vishnu, by taking the opportunity to hear and chant about the Lord more, and to reduce one's bodily activities, to reduce those propensities which can put us, you know, on the animal platform. Eating, sleeping, mating, defending, we try to reduce those to some degree. So therefore devotees eat very little. Actually when Prabhupada did mention this Pandavaneerja codicil, on this particular codicil, we know that Bhima approached Vyasadeva and said, you know, I just cannot fast on these codicils because the fire of my digestion is just so powerful. You know, it's just uncontrolled, I must eat. And Vyasadeva explained that you can fast on this one day, this one codicil, you actually get the benefit of fasting for all the codicils. But you have to take not even so much as enough water to immerse a mustard seed in. You know, so for instance, that means it's not as if you go and try and drink that. It means if accidentally you're having a shower and a little bit goes into your mouth, you know, there's not too much. If you start licking around the lips and that, you're gone. So, you know, it's very strict. No food from, you know, sunrise today to sunrise tomorrow, and then right the policy. That is part of the Nirjala policy. Prabhupada, when mentioning this ecodicy, he said actually ecodicy means nirjala. Ecodicy itself means no food, water. That's the proper way to follow ecodicy. That's the standard. But in Kali Yuga, Shastra does offer concessions. That and therefore, Srila Prabhupada said that, you know, we can take the concession according to Shastra for Kali Yuga. You know, we can take a little milk and some foods like you know, vegetables, all of this. What do we have here? Dave was deep frying the deep. Yeah, but that's, you know, and some fruits like this. That's, you know, and Prabhupada didn't want the devotees introducing something else. There was one devotee who said, "Oh, I will fast a full fast one day every week." Prabhupada, no, 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 don't introduce anything into our society that's unnecessary. You know, just the ecodicy fast, that's enough. That's actually a minimum requirement of austerity. So the Shastras are not asking us to do extreme fasting every day, or even once a week, or even every 2 or 3 days. But just, you know, once a fortnight, and even then you can still eat. If possible, you know, devotees may, you know, go without food and water. But if one has a very active service, especially preaching, or you know, if the devotee actually feels somewhat ill from fasting, you know, then they can also eat. And Srila Prabhupada, you know, mentioned that Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Sarasvati Thakur, you know, he's saying that because that was the example his spiritual master said. Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Sarasvati Thakur is very, very strict. You know, sometimes Prabhupada said, you know, that, you know, in essence he's not as strict as Bhakti Siddhanta. In that sense, you know, Prabhupada is very liberal, very, you know, he gave us as much concessions as we could, but very careful that, you know, okay, don't ask more than this, because then you're actually just trying to eat and sleep and mate and defend, you know. You know, except at least this, like this. So one time, one brahmachari, someone went to Bhaktisiddhanta and said, "Oh, such and such a devotee cannot go out and preach today because being the ecodicy, and because he cannot eat and what have you, that he's feeling ill and therefore he cannot go out." And Srila Bhaktisiddhanta said, "No, no, no, you tell him to eat, you know, ecodicy prasad, and go out and preach." Like that. That was, you know, and that was Prabhupada's hand. But, of course, if someone hasn't, certainly one should. Certainly, if. You know, we should reduce our material activities if we have things which are, if we do perform activities which are not directly related to serving Krishna, we should at least on these days try and reduce that down to nil today and spend the day hearing and chanting. And even as devotees, if there is services to the Lord which don't necessarily need to be done on the Ekadasi day, and they can be, you know, done on another day, they should also be put aside. You know, but if someone has their duty they must do, of course they shouldn't put that aside in the name of the Ekadasi. And so the Ekadasi also, you know, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, another, we see the requirement for having a spiritual master, because even very, very elevated devotees, you know, these activities, they become, there's a lot of contrasting instructions, or apparent contradictory instructions. So sometimes, quite senior devotees, you know, the sastras give instructions and they may wonder how to follow them properly. For instance, we know that, for instance, we don't generally offer Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu grains on the Ekadasi, because he's in the mood of a devotee. Although he's Krishna, he's Vishnu Tattva, he's the Supreme Lord, but he's actually in the mood of his devotee, and therefore we don't offer him grains. Although he's the Supreme Lord, so he can eat grains if he wants to. And one time he did this, he said to his father, "Oh, today," he was a child, "today I'm feeling sick, and I need some grains. I need some Vishnu Prasad that is grains." He said, "If you go down to the house of Jagadish Pandit and Haran Maya," I think his name was, "you find they've made a wonderful offering for Lord Vishnu, because Lord Vishnu still gets the full offering of grains and everything, even on the codicil, because they're not subject to that sort of thing." And his father went down and he actually got some of that codicil Mahaprasad and brought that back as Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Hey, like this. So, you know, one may question, sometimes Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, you know, ate Mahaprasad, even on the codicil, he followed his example. People do that. They actually, you know, take the shastras like that out of context. But there are other shastric indications which say the opposite. So, for instance, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, one time, again, when he was young, he said to his mother, "Sachi, I have one request. What is that? That you please follow a codicil. Not eat grains on the Ekadasi day." So, because there are some people, again, you know, even amongst the Brahmin community, who say that the women don't have to follow a Ekadasi, and particularly those who may be with husband. So Sachimata was not following because she had her husband. But those who don't have husband, according to some of the medical communities, they don't follow the policy. But they do follow the policy. So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, "No, I want you to follow." And he quoted different sastric injunctions that everyone should follow: brahmanas, kshatriyas, vaishyas, sudras, women. Everyone should follow the codicil. So we see that although he's the Supreme Personality of Godhead, he's independent. You know, he even wants his own mother to follow the codicil. What to speak of all his devotees? And some other devotees went to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and they said, I think it was Gopinath Acharya, said, Lord Chaitanya was in Jagannath Puri. He said, "We're confused because the sastric injunction is that when there is Mahaprasad, you know, prasad, especially maha prasad, you should honour it immediately. And the Vedic injunctions also say that even if it's maha prasad, you cannot eat, you know, you cannot eat grains, you know, on the Ekadasi day. And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he explained that, you know, to be the proper disciple of the Guru, you have to take the instructions and not envy one instruction and say, yes, I like this one, but I don't like this one. And we see that, you know, sometimes many disciples, you know, who may have left the International Society of Krishna Consciousness said, yes, I like chanting Hare Krishna, I like eating prasad, I like dancing, I like this, but I don't want to follow no illicit sex, no gambling, no intoxication. You know, I'll take this one, but not this one. But Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, actually, non-devotees will eat Krishna, eat Vishnu prasad, and you know, even on the Ekadasi, saying, well, this is prasada. That's the Shastric injunction. So what they do is they select one injunction. Yeah, I'll follow that one. Oh, let me have some of that pakor and the sweet rice. I'll follow this injunction, Mahaprasad. But they envy the other injunction. Oh, that one should not eat grains on the Ekadasi. That's the activity of a non-devotee, according to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Why? It's because they have no intention to follow the spiritual master. They have no intention to follow the charities or the like this. Non-devotees do that. A devotee will inquire. They always inquire and take shelter. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu gave the answer. How do we do that? He said, you honour that prasadam immediately, that Mahaprasad. Yes, here is Krishna prasad. I offer my obeisance, I offer my respects. And then tomorrow I will partake of this prasad. So you honour that prasad? Yes, give me a little, what have you, put something aside, I will come, I will have this tomorrow. I will honour, yes, here is Krishna prasad, this is not ordinary food, I cannot reject this, I must have some tomorrow, I will honour it. It's not ordinary food. But I will not eat it now because the Shastric injunction is that we should not eat grains. So, in this way, we see that item number 5, that even after, you know, taking shelter and following the instructions of the spiritual master, one should always inquire, you know, how to make progress. If there is some difficulty, you know, there's some confusion, you just ask the spiritual master or the spiritual authority or the representative of the Supreme Lord. You know, or look in, you know, Srila Prabhupada's books, you know, in this way. But if we just immediately speculate, looking for the opportunity to maintain a certain standard of eating, sleeping, mating and defending, you know, it's very dangerous. Very dangerous. So, you know, on this day of Nirjala Ekadasi, some devotees will actually take prasad, you know, of course not the grain prasad, and even when we say not the grain prasad, one should be very careful even with the non-grain maha prasad, you know. A lot of devotees don't take maha prasad, you know, at all, if they've all been on the same plate, and there's even the slightest chance that, you know, one fragment of a grain may have gone into the non-grain prasad. You know, many devotees won't, you know, eat the non-grain maha prasad as well. They'll just eat prasad, which is, may have been cooked especially, being very careful that no grains have, you know, come near that prasad like that. So some devotees will eat according to their, you know, working capacity, because they have a lot of service to do. And other devotees, especially on this day, may you know, avoid taking anything, even, you know, a drop of water, like that, according to their service and their ability and their health. And in this way, that's the proper instructions. So, So these are the different things that we can derive from this pastime of Markandeya Rishi. One should be very, very careful not to associate with material energy. It's a primary principle amongst all the principles of devotional service. And even if one is a great yogi, a great devotee like Markandeya Rishi, Krishna doesn't like it, you know. And therefore, these days of a codicil and the instructions of the Shastra and the instructions of the spiritual master are there to help us to reduce that association of the material energy to the minimum, only where it's absolutely necessary for our service, and then we're completely liberated from any. But anyone who avoids Shastra, avoids Guru, speculates, and is not, has a, you know, somewhat strong respect for the potency of Maya, they'll be swallowed up in Maya like that. So I'll just leave it here. If anyone has any questions or comments on anything. We don't know how to inquire. We inquire to our best of ability. And you know, Sanatana Goswami, after he asked his questions, he showed us that, you know, my dear Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, that if there are any other questions which I've not asked you, which I should have asked, you please answer that as well. And we see that in the Srimad Bhagavatam. Who did that in the Bhagavatam? That was Chanaka Rishi to the Suta Goswami. There are several different examples of that. That, you know, we inquire. It's our duty to inquire, and then we can do like that. That, you know, if there's something else you think I should know that I've not inquired about, you please give me that instruction as well. Srila Prabhupada, if you go through Srila Prabhupada's letters, many, many, many different times when people wrote him letters, he would say to them, he would give the answer that they wanted, since they'd made the inquiry, but he would say to them that actually these questions can be, you know, discussed with the local devotees. That's what he wanted. That makes a very practical, in Kali Yuga especially, it's better you have a worldwide community of devotees who all share their particular level of realization to the devotees, rather than we just have one person who becomes the absolute authority on everything. That's very dangerous in Kali Yuga. And in fact, that was the downfall of the Gaudiya Math. That Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Sarasvati, you know, previous to Bhakti Siddhanta Sarasvati, there was not so much need that the one acharya, you know, could actually just, you know, give instruction, but even then, out of etiquette, you see that Maritam Das Bakur, Shamananda, Srinivasacharya, they were initiated by you know, their spiritual masters, but then you know, and many, many different devotees were initiated by different spiritual masters, but when it came time, if you want to learn Shastra, you go and become the, you take Shiksha from Jiva Goswami. And another devotee, you want to learn deity worship, you go and learn from such and such Pujari, who's, you know, the head Pujari of this temple here. You want to learn the preliminary Shastras of logic, and grammar, what have you, you go and study from, you know, so even Jiva Goswami himself, although he learned from, you know, Rupa and Sanatan, but he had preliminary studies of Shastra from others who were expert in some of those preliminary understandings of the, you know, foundation understandings of the Vedas, you know, how to read and write Sanskrit, grammar, logic, you know, things like that. So that is the proper etiquette which is there. And as Kali Yuga progresses, more and more we should be very, very careful of the danger of just accepting one devotee as the absolute authority on everything, whether it be in one temple or whether it be worldwide. We don't do that, you know, we don't have one GBC. We have many GBCs. And even, you know, amongst temple presidents, and temple presidents also have regional secretaries. The regional secretaries are meant to look after the temple presidents so that the temple presidents don't become, you know, the one absolute authority. And the regional secretaries also can't be absolute authorities in their region, so therefore we have GBCs. And the GBCs can't become, you know, an absolute authority, therefore we have a body of GBC members. And this. So, you know, the proper etiquette, and in order to avoid the dangers in Kali Yuga, we should, Prabhupada wanted that as far as possible we inquire from the local community, which is very healthy. And within the local community you will find that some devotees are very expert in one thing. You know, if you want to understand something about grihastha life, there are some sannyasis which will actually give you better advice than the grihasthas. Sometimes some of the brahmacharis actually more level in some temples. The person who knows the science best is the one to ask. It's not necessarily just because one is a grihastha or a brahmachari. Some of the grihasthas can tell you more about brahmachari life, especially if they've been through it, than sometimes if you're in an ashram with a lot of new brahmacharis or brahmacharini. Not the brahmacharis. But the brahmacharinis also can, you know, can learn from those who may not be in their ashram. So it's the person who actually knows the science. You approach them, you know, locally. Some devotees are very expert in deity worship. Some devotees are very expert in management. Some devotees are very expert in shastra. Some devotees are very expert in festivals of worship of the Tulsi. So you actually go and ask those devotees. Like that. That's the nice system. That's the proper etiquette. Especially in Kali Yuga, we have to be very, very careful of giving anyone in any situation absolute authority. And actually, ISKCON itself, we suffered a lot of problems in previous years, you know, if we go back into the 80s, where we had the zonal acharya system, where one guru became the absolute authority for everything in that, and even there were, you know, senior devotees of Srila Prabhupada. They were not even listened to in that zone. It was just the one zonal guru, you know, was the absolute authority. So, and therefore we saw, because it was an artificial system, that it created huge problems. Because it was not stable. And it created a huge foundational shaking. Shake up of ISKCON. And then they stopped that. No, no, no more absolute authorities. Let us have many gurus. As Prabhupada wants, as the Shastras wants. But according to their qualification, according, you know, everyone can actually be guru. Everyone in this room can actually be guru. If they follow their guru, if they become a good disciple, they're the next guru. One cannot become a guru without becoming a perfect disciple of his guru. If they, and then taking shelter of the guru, if they properly inquire from them, follow their instructions, become perfect in, you know, really mature in following those instructions, and therefore they're following Shastra with a lot of common sense, and coming to the point where they're eating, sleeping, mating, and defending is reducing, you know, to the minimum, and their activities in devotional service are becoming very, very strong. That person who comes through, it doesn't matter whether they're a man, woman, Australian, Hindu, old, young.